Welcome to Ask Peggy About Your Finances, because prosperity is so much more than money. Brought to you by writer, speaker, and certified financial planner, Peggy Doviak.
Thank you to Sports Talk 1400 in Norman for production and studio assistance.
Hello, and welcome to the Ask Peggy About Your Finances show. My name is Peggy Doviak, and I'm a certified financial planner practitioner and a personal finance author. This is a show to help you understand your money better, and we've got some interesting topics today. First, I want to talk about the Bureau of Labor Statistics data and why it's so very important that we can trust that. Then, it looks like the Securities and Exchange Commission has created an AI task force for ways that they can implement the technology in the work that they do. In the Plan Your Prosperity segment, we're going to look at the question, who can you trust? And then finally, in the Ask Peggy segment, we're going to look at retirement cash flow options and why you may have more things that you can do than you may be aware of. So let's get started with the Bulls and Bears market and economic update. This is for the week that ended August 1st, 2025. Again, I cannot believe how fast this year is going, which makes me sound old. And I'm not old, but it still makes me sound old. Much of the loss this week actually occurred on Friday after the jobs data came out soft, but then even more because President Trump fired the person who was the person in charge of the jobs data at the Bureau of Labor Statistics. So last week, the Dow was down a little less than 3%, and the S&P 500 was down about 2.3%. The NASDAQ was down 2.17%, and gold was up about 2.3%. Oil, West Texas Intermediate Crude, front month price was up 3.37%, currently at $67.33 a barrel. The VIX, the Volatility Index, went up 36.5%. And I will tell you, I checked the market data before I started recording this morning. I did not check the volatility data. Remember, one way you can kind of put your fingers on the pulse of what's going on right now, because it can be very, very overwhelming to try to keep up, is to watch the volatility index and the dollar index. As the volatility index goes up, that means people are at least perceiving things as more volatile than they like. So a 36% increase in the volatility index is pretty huge. Remember that the dollar index, the more a dollar costs, the more then it costs someone else to purchase a product in dollars. And it has to do with whether or not dollars are seen as strong or whether it takes more dollars to make something happen. So a dollar index that's going up is a bit of a bad sign. Now, I will tell you, when you're looking at currency issues, there are always two sides of a coin. So the dollar going up is not nearly as disturbing as the volatility index going up, but it's still something to watch. The 10-year Treasury yield also looks worse when it's going up because it's costing people more money to buy our debt. That's never really a good thing. But it kind of bucked the rest of the trends last week, and it dropped by 16.7%. And the current rate on a 10-year Treasury yield as of Friday was 4.225%. That made the aggregate bond index go up a little less than 0.7%. Remember, most of those times, those two things are not going the same direction at the same time. We've had a couple of weeks of data recently that's bucked that trend, right? So every time you think there's a rule, something can happen that makes that rule not hold. This week, when the 10-year Treasury yield went down, the aggregate bond fund went up in value. And Bitcoin dropped about 3.25%. So there was, in my opinion, one really disturbing thing that happened that week. And it was the chair of the Bureau of Labor Statistics. So she is the chief labor statistician. Okay, that is her title. Her name is Erica McEnterfer. And forgive me if that is not the correct pronunciation, but she got fired when the jobs data that came out on Friday was weaker than the president wanted it to be. And so he called the numbers basically a con. He did not use the word con, but he said that the data was being manipulated to make him look bad. Okay, so whatever you want to call that in your own mind. And, he called it phony, too. And so that's because there were some downward revisions for earlier periods. Now, if you are a longtime listener to the show, you already know that all economic data gets revisited and redefined and new numbers come out 2 or 3 times before the actual final data has settled out. That is somewhat due to the fact that there is an effort for the government to be transparent in the data that it provides. So when it gets measurements in, it provides it. There is a schedule that unemployment data comes out on. And on that day, whatever data that they have, whatever they can put together and consolidate, they provide. Now, as you may suspect, these numbers are way more complicated to calculate than people think they are. And so you may get some other data the next week that causes you to have to revise what you put out. So there was a revision. The jobs number isn't good. Now, for anyone paying attention, if you look at the number of people who are being fired from their jobs right now, especially government and federal government workers, there's been a lot of firing. That is beginning to show in the employment data because those people are citizens and they count just like the rest of us do. And so this is looking at, you know, how bad is the jobs data? Quite frankly, it's pretty bad. I didn't write down the exact number, and I'm not going to make you hold around here. This is a radio show, but it did come in not as good as anybody wanted, not as good as anyone wanted. And additionally, firing this person, she's not the one who calculates the data. She is simply the one who provides the final data and gets it out to however it's published. I've never really had to look into the details of this before, but she is not the only person who puts together the data. Statisticians, who are federal workers who do not care what party you're a member of, all need the data, and they all put the data together, and they don't privilege one party over another. There are some people who believe that the economic data was a lot of how Trump won the last election. And when the data's been good, he has sung its praises to the moon. And now he's fired that same person that he praised, not because he actually thinks there's anything wrong with the data. My opinion only. Okay, so if whatever network you're listening to this on, I'm the one saying this, not them. But he just didn't like it. And he's feeling slightly more emboldened recently about being able to just do things. And so he fired her. The reason this is a crisis is if someone who is very, very pro the administration, who promises good data, gets in there, we have fallen by categories and categories of the trustworthiness of the data that we put out. It's a huge, giant, big deal. It could lead to actually economic catastrophe if other countries start thinking we're not telling the truth. And it will cripple the Fed being able to make decisions because they will not be able to trust that the data is accurate. So good data, whether you like it or not, is always a good thing.
Thank you to Sports Talk 1400 and Norman for production and studio assistance.
Welcome back to the legislative update of the Ask Peggy About Your Finances show. And recently, the Securities and Exchange Commission, the SEC, has announced that they're launching a task force on artificial intelligence. And the point of having this task force is to make sure that AI is being used in the same ways across the SEC's different groups, as well as giving them the ability to have accelerated innovation, which I actually just think being able to analyze more data more quickly, make sure that things are efficient and accurate, and the goal is to protect investors. And I don't know about you guys, but AI just as an entity makes me slightly nervous, even though in truth, we've all been using AI for a long time and not thinking about it. Because the predictive text when you're writing a message to your friend and the word that you want to say pops up on the bottom, so all you have to do is click on it. That's because using AI, your phone has figured out how you communicate the most frequently, which is why specific words that you use a lot will be more likely to pop up on that list. Or if you have a word that frequently follows another word. So like if I put in Peggy, I will almost always have pop up on the screen Doviak, because it knows that I usually, when I'm dealing with things, have to use my first and my last name. So AI's not new. And one of the things that AI is remarkably good at is analyzing large batches of data for similarities. Now, in some ways, that's being used in places we're not crazy about, like when AI is writing books and things like that. It works because we structure sentences similarly and it becomes easy to do. But here's where AI has the ability to do a huge amount of good, and that is to recognize patterns in behavior that might be a little off, but either because the human analyst has so much they're trying to deal with that they can't get to everything, or the pattern is just unusual enough that the human misses it. So, I mean, someone may be following a pattern, but maybe that pattern's easy to see and maybe it isn't. And I'm specifically right now talking about bad actors who try to do things in ways, I mean, if they're a good bad actor, they're trying to do things in ways that's tricky to catch. And because a lot of what the SEC is doing is trying to find fraud, and they specifically say in their goals here that they're hoping this will help them keep consumers safer. And I can imagine a number of scenarios where using a tool that can really find patterns easily, that can sift through huge amounts of data in a short period of time, might be very helpful in trying to uncover someone who is doing things with client money that they shouldn't be doing. So, yeah, I'm not crazy about AI, but I'll tell you what, I think I pretty much have to get on the train because I think it's here to stay. I think that perhaps it's being painted in broad brush strokes that we'll refine, and then we'll find other ways that it's very, very good at what it's doing again. So, you know, I don't think that where we are in AI is where we're going to be in 5 years. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if there's a pullback and then it goes again, kind of like what happened with the internet. Many of those initial internet companies that did not make it because they did not have positive cash flow because people did not want it, those companies went away, and then a whole new batch of companies that used basically the same technology and basically doing the same kind of thing, but people had gotten used to it. So I do not think that AI is bad. I don't think AI is evil. I think that every time we've had a major change in how we structure, how we live, at the beginning of it, everybody's afraid of it. So I don't see this as a bad tool. I am excited that the SEC is using this, that they're implementing something maybe on a more a comprehensive basis. You know, the devil's always in the details, but I think it's a good idea. Anything that helps root out bad financial advisor or broker behavior, I'm always going to be a fan of. And so I'm hoping that this is the start of something that will help keep consumers safer going forward.
Thank you to Sports Talk 1400 and Norman for production and studio assistance.
Welcome back to the Plan Your Prosperity segment of the Ask Peggy About Your Finances show. And today I want to talk about some tips on how to decide if the information that you're reading is real, if it's an opinion, or if it's deliberately designed to mislead you. Now, because this is a finance show, everything I'm talking about today specifically deals with trying to sort through financial information. That's always been tricky. And these days, and especially with AI, and you know, I talked about all of the great things about AI in the last segment, but one of the bad things that it does is in the hands of a bad actor, all kinds of things can look true that aren't. And so it makes it a little bit harder to be sure what you're analyzing. So with today's online publishing, whether that's someone with a Substack account or someone you've read on Reddit or social media, everyone today has a much louder platform than they had when I was young. So I am 59 and laptops were really coming into their own when I was in college. And my last course in graduate school talked about this brand new thing coming out called the internet. So all of these changes have actually happened during my lifetime. When I was young, if somebody had published a book or published an article, you knew that it had been peer-reviewed or vetted or edited. And yes, there was wrong information or perhaps socially acceptable information that might not be fantastic, but it was, for the most part, pretty accurate to the thinking of that day. Today, I can come up with some harebrained idea in the morning, I can put it on my Substack in the afternoon, and suddenly it's out there in the world. If I can create ways of making stuff go viral, I can do pretend things. So what you want to start out by doing is looking at the author's credentials. Now, if something's been forwarded, what you actually want to make sure that you're looking at are the credentials of the person who created it. Even if they have a list of letters after their names, you can look those up because you want to know what they had to do to earn those credentials. So in financial services specifically, there are all kinds of certifications you can get. Some of them are difficult to get, like the CFP certification or earning your chartered financial analyst designation. Those are both stinking hard things to get. But there's other certificates and titles that people can earn that they get by going to class for 3 hours. So not only do you want to make sure they look like an expert, but you want to make sure that those designations that they have matter. And unrelated to what you read online, when you're interviewing a real financial person, perfectly okay to ask them what they did to earn those letters after their name. If you're reading something and you think it's research, you want to look and see where that research was published, and you want to see how it was financed. Now, I understand the draw of the public-private partnership. public being a university, private being a company. The company helps provide some money to fund something. But you always want to be sure that the data that you're reading, that the study that you're getting the results from, that everything was done rigorously. If something is done just through a company and that research is only coming from somebody who wants you to buy something, that doesn't mean the research is wrong, but it does mean that you need to look really carefully at what they're doing. So if I am looking at like a mutual fund company or an exchange traded fund company, and I am reading a study that they have published, that doesn't mean the study is wrong, but it does mean that I'm going to want to see who they referenced on their reference page. I want to see who they quote in the study. I'm going to look those people up because, you know, basically I'm a pain in the neck and I really like academic discipline. So you want to be careful that you do that. And if you're in a situation where people are being very critical of academic rigor, you really want to ask yourself why, and you want to go in and look. You know, maybe within the academic discipline, there's a bias. That happens. Not all things that come out are perfect, even when they're researched. But you really want to pay close attention. And your primary question when you're reading anything or listening to anything anyone is telling you is not what are they saying, but why are they saying it? Specifically related to investment things. If you see returns as part of the marketing or part of the article, you want to pay very close attention as to how those periods of time were chosen. I knew someone who is no longer in the business who would give his clients the returns, and the period of time was there in very small print, but it was only when the market was going up. So just pretend, for example, as of January 1, 2025, something started going up. It goes up till the 2nd of March, and then it drops. So the first time period the person would give to show the return would be January 1st through March 2nd. Maybe it drops through March 27th and then goes up till April 15th. The second period of return that he would show was March 27th to April 15th. If you're not doing your homework, you will assume, as I did until I couldn't figure out because I knew the data was wrong and I couldn't figure out how it was wrong, that in fact, all he had done was show the periods of time where the investments made a positive return. Generally, returns are weekly or monthly or quarterly or annually. Anytime somebody starts choosing weird dates, unless it's like the start date of the creation of a mutual fund, right? Then you really want to ask yourself why. And you really want to go in and find a chart of whatever it is they're trying to convince you to buy. See how it did during the periods they aren't reporting, because there's a very good chance that it was going down at that point. Again, related to financial services, you want to see if the investment performances includes the fees. Sometimes software makes that easy to do. Sometimes it doesn't. You just need to know so that if you're paying 1% a year or if you're paying a 5% commission, you need to know what were you actually doing net of those fees. So in financial services, the fiduciary standard is pretty much a gold standard of someone who has a legal responsibility to be acting in your best interest. However, that legal responsibility is only as good as the enforcement. That's why I'm kind of excited to see AI used as a data analysis tool, I hope, so that we can catch more of that. But you just need to be careful. And even though someone may have a certified financial planner designation and they're an investment advisor, that doesn't mean you shouldn't still dig a little bit under the hood to make sure that what they're saying makes sense and it's logical. And if they are citing something, you know, what are the sources from what they're citing? Because these days, it is feeling very much like the Wild West to me. in all kinds of parts of our lives. And so I want to make sure that you are looking at things in a way that will help you catch what's going on. I hope the regulation stays tough, because this is all the money you have, and it's really important that the person you're working with is trying to help you succeed.
Thank you to Sports Talk 1400 and Norman for production and studio assistance.
Welcome back to the Ask Peggy segment of the Ask Peggy About Your Finances show. And I've run a little long today, so I'm going to give you a short answer this week, and I'm going to give you a longer answer next week. And the question is, Peggy, I'm about to retire. How do I get money out of my accounts? So the first thing that you can do is annuitize the account. In other words, you turn whatever account you have into an annuity. And some financial advisors recommend this a lot. So what that does is it gives you a monthly check coming from the account. And you know that unless the company goes under, that check is going to keep on coming. However, like your pension check, you may not be able to change it. Once it's there, it's there. You may also limit future portfolio growth, and you may be locked into something low because the company is making a guarantee. The other way you can get money out of retirement accounts, and lots of people don't know this, is you can just start requesting monthly distributions coming from your account. Now, I have discovered recently that there are some retirement accounts that won't let you do that, that you either have to annuitize it with them or you have to roll it into an IRA, but like a 403b or a 401k might not let you. But all you have to do to fix that is roll that account into an IRA. Once it's in an IRA, you can set up a monthly check dispersal that automatically comes out of the account, and then it goes into your bank account because financial advisors, or even you, if you're using an online company, can go in and attach a bank account to it so that every month the same amount of money comes into your account. So it functions just like the annuity in the availability of getting the monthly payment. Now, anytime you have money in the market, there is not a guarantee that you can't lose money. So with an IRA, you have the option of keeping a higher rate of return, but you can still have a portfolio that can lose money. And so that means that theoretically, you can actually run out of money before you die. But a lot of how well this works depends upon how carefully you and your financial professional set it up to work so that you know what kind of risk tolerance is going to make running out of money unlikely. The other thing you can do when you don't annuitize is request a lump sum fund. You don't want to do this too much, because if you do it too much, you're going to screw up the whole cash flow part of it. But unlike the annuity, where it's a single amount, with the IRA, you can vary. So it's important to understand the differences before you decide.
Thank you to Sports Talk 1400 and Norman for production and studio assistance.
You may submit personal finance questions to the Ask Peggy Facebook page and learn more at PeggyDoviak.com. And remember, prosperity is so much more than money.